Hey everyone, this is Eric from Phase One Trading. Welcome to episode 7 of P1 Talks. With me today is my co-host Steven as well. Just a quick reminder, don't forget to like this video, subscribe to the channel if you find our content helpful. You can always follow us on Twitter at Phase One Trading or search for the show using hashtag P1 Talks where you can get additional content from our trading community. You can also visit us at phaseonetrading.com for more information about our group. This afternoon, we're very excited to have a very special guest on our show. He is not afraid to speak his mind. He's a no bullshit kind of personality on social media. I did read that he's the world's foremost authority on pot stocks, according to his wife. You may know him as the Wolf of Weed Street, the Wolf, Jason Spetafora. Jason, thanks for being here, man.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you sound great.
Yeah, perfect.
So we wanted to kind of touch on a little bit of everything today. Hopefully we have enough time to kind of hit it all because everything's been so crazy. But we wanted to get into the kind of markets overall, investing, the marijuana space, a little bit about True Trading Group, and a little bit about the shroom space, which I know is kind of flying under the radar right now, but definitely has a lot of interest. But I think ultimately I wanted to start with your Long Island roots. I mean, some of you know I'm from Long Island. I know you told me in the past that you are as well. Where are you actually originally from?
I'm from, I went to Connectquod High School.
Nice.
So I'm a T-Bird, which is like Oakdale, Bohemia, and Ronkonkoma, and like a little bit of Sayville. But yeah, I'm from Bohemia originally. So south of Vets Highway, north of Sunrise. So like right in between.
Yeah, it's like, that's about 15 minutes from me. But everything on Long Island's 15 minutes.
Yeah, so. Everything. It's like your mom 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
First girlfriend's 15 minutes away. Yeah. So I know what he leaves.
And what's funny is like, I never realized I used to say that because it's true. People like, you know, people, I know some people from upstate New York and they go, how far is that? How far does it take you to do that? I'm like 15 minutes. And then they kind of called me out on it. I'm like, I guess everything really is 15 minutes away from each other. But I saw you posted on your Twitter the other day, an All-American GIF with like Bernie Sanders sitting at All-American. Like right away, I was like, wow, that's the best throwback to Long Island right now. Because like anybody who saw that picture knew that that was All-American. You know, I think people in California know that's All-American.
My niece got married in Massapequa at this place called Riviera.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
For like when you leave, I had All-American like delivered for all the guests.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've been to the Riviera. Nice place right on the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They did actually a big renovation since Sandy over there. It's a really nice place. But
yep.
Yeah, All-American's cool, man. I think they only still take cash. It's an old school burger joint for those of you who don't know. It's been on like Diners and Drives in the past. And I think they even close in the middle of the winter. It's like the family's Greek or something. They go back to Greece. They just shut the whole shop down for like 2 months in the middle of the winter. It's kind of interesting.
That place is the best.
But so then you moved to Florida, huh?
Yeah. So I, from Connectquod. So I went to school at Nassau for a couple of years, and then I moved to Arizona. I went to University of Arizona, which was just, party school. Never really looked at it. I just saw that it was like number one in Playboy and went. And then when I was set to graduate, I was like, well, I don't want to get a real job. So I moved to Australia and played lacrosse for a team over there for a couple months. I got like a 3-month contract. And then when that was done, I backpacked a little and it was still kind of cold. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go to Fiji, moved to Fiji, lived in a hut on this little island on the beach for like a month, paid the locals like $30 a day. And I was like, you just got to feed me. Came back to Australia, did the whole East Coast, surfed the entire East Coast from Bell's Beach to town of 1770. Picked some bananas up in Cairns, which is like northeast, and then moved back to Sydney for the last month. And then I just got sick of being poor. So I moved back to Long Island, came back. It was like a blizzard, like 2 feet of snow. And I was like, what the hell is this? So then I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to move to South Beach. I've never been.
Right now.
Seems like a good idea. And I moved down here in like 2006.
Nice. Yeah, that's me right now. There's 2 feet of snow on the ground and I haven't even shoveled a single flake yet. So after I get done here, we're going to do some shoveling and snowman building. Originally, what was your first like kind of adult job then? I guess, you know, so you didn't have a lot of money. You moved back to Long Island, which is really not a great place to live if you don't have any money.
No,
plus the living here is insane.
Well, but it's Long Island, so you know you're living with your parents for a
yeah.
little. So,
what was like your first kind of adult legitimate job that you took?
My first job, I worked as a financial advisor for Mass Mutual, which was like Oppenheimer Funds at the time. And that lasted about a month. And I was like, this is probably the most boring job in the world. And then I asked my neighbor, I was like, hey, can you put me on like one of your construction crews while I'm looking? And I did that. And he's like, man, you are shit at construction. I'm like, I know, I'm awful. He's like, why don't you do sales for me? So I did sales for him and it was straight commission, but I was good at it. So, you know, I ended up crushing like my first year when like all my buddies were making like 30K out of college. I was making like 80, 90. So that's what kind of seeded me to come to Florida. And then when I came to Florida, I embellished a little bit on some resumes and I ended up getting hired for this job that I was completely not qualified for, working for this disaster recovery firm. Like after hurricanes or fires, they like fix everything. And the reason I got hired was the guy's like, well, you know, between you graduating and you working, what were you doing? And I was like, well, I moved to Australia to go surf. And he's like, oh, I'm a surfer. He's like, where'd you surf? And for the next 45 minutes, we talked about surfing. Wow. So I'm like, not qualified for this job. And he's like, you know what? I'm just going to offer you the job.
Yeah, you were in. You were in at that point.
Yeah.
And like 6 months goes by and they're getting ready to fire me. And because I didn't know what I was doing. And then all of a sudden, like a tornado hits Central Florida. And so like we have to go out and like do all like the recovery. And it's, you make like 5% of the gross of the project. So I roll up, you know, I'm driving like my like 2004 Lexus, like zip up like Ralph Lauren. Like I look like it was like a sweater that like your
grandma. You look like you didn't work out a day in your life.
Yeah. I look like no construction guy ever. And I was like, what do I do? And they're like, you sell. And I was like, what, you know, I was like, okay. So they dropped me off on a street at like 6 a.m. And then at like 3, my boss comes and he's like, just, you know, like what this fucking guy, look at his hair. It's all like, well done, you know, because all these guys are like rough. And
you want to look poor when you're selling.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, how'd you do? And I was like, I don't know. And I go into my backpack and I just had like 20 contracts. He's nice. Like, what is this? And I was like, well, I'm like, I started with this guy. I started just talking to him and he's from Brooklyn. So I was like, we were talking about Brooklyn and how like I was born in Brooklyn. And then he introduced me to a neighbor. And then I was like, hey, why don't you get all your friends? And I'll just kind of tell you the lay of the land. And I was like, I just want to give you information. I'm not trying to sell you anything. And so they all ended up selling for me. You know, like I sold them all.
That's it. I mean, honesty is usually the best sales and strategy there is.
It's really weird. Like after a disaster, you know, I feel very uncomfortable selling. Mm. And, you know, it you know, and lo and behold, I ended up making like 200K in commission that day. And they were just like, holy shit, we've been using you the wrong way. Cause they, you know, they were using me for like, oh, go out and market to these like adjusters and like take them out to golf and all this stuff, all this shit that I didn't want to do. I just wanted to go and like close.
Yeah.
So then they started deploying me all over the United States, like wildfires, like fucking earthquakes, like F5 tornado, like just crazy stuff. And then eventually one of the bigger firms, which is like the biggest disaster recovery firm in the world, ended up hiring me. So it was like getting moved up to the Yankees from like AAA.
Well, so then some of those good paydays, did you eventually start just experimenting with the stock market? Just
No. I experimented with drugs and fast food. No, seriously, that's exactly what I did. I was just I was traveling.
Me too. I'm laughing, but I'm with you on that. I used to spend all my money on alcohol and jet skis.
I mean, you know, I was like in my 20s living in South Beach, you know, which was crazy because I was like the only guy that like actually had a job in South Beach. I wasn't a promoter. And my roommate had a private concierge company where he would just take care of like millionaires and billionaires. So I got to meet a lot of cool people, but my roommate was really dumb and just couldn't manage it. So I was like, I don't got anything going on. I could go to the Italian Alps. Yeah, no problem, you know? And, and I did that and, you know, I just started getting a little bit more and more bored. Then Hurricane Ike hit, which was right before the financial crisis. And my whole thing was I'm going to work one hurricane and then be out because I'd never worked a hurricane to this point. And hurricanes were like the holy grail because as sad as that sounds, you know, you make 2 to 5% commission on some of these projects. Like to give you an idea, Galveston University Hospital, which is in Texas, got hit and we did a $217 million project. One of my business colleagues, I guess you could say, sold the project at like 5% commission.
Wow. And they were like, how old were you at the time?
When I'm in Galveston at this point, I'm 29.
Wow.
So I ended up signing in my first week, I signed a $30 million project. and then that same week I signed a $15 million project. And then like a bunch of little projects that I was like, I don't even fucking know what they were worth. So we're rolling trucks in and the way it works is we get paid, I get paid, you know? So like insurance cuts us a check because we mitigate a lot of the damage. And we're rolling trucks and I'm like, you know, like every day I'm just like masturbating with $100 bills, like going into this day. And they stop us and we're like, what's going on? And they were like, this is a Lehman property. And I was like, what does that mean? They're like, Lehman Brothers owned this. And I was like, okay, it had just gone under. So they couldn't even afford their deductible. And then my other project, we started the work. And then it took us a year and a half to get paid on, you know, on like the first phase of it. And then the second phase. And you know, like I was in Texas for like 6 months. And then after that, I was like, fuck it, I'm leaving. Went surfing, went to South Africa, went cage diving with great whites, came back, moved back to Brooklyn for a little bit, and then came back to South Florida. And then they reoffered me my job. And I just didn't really want to do it. And I was, you know, I met my wife at the time and she was, you know, trying to get me to open a savings account. And I was like, no, I'm not going to open a savings account. And I'd always been interested in investing, but I just never got around to it. Mm-hmm. But now like all of a sudden I'm like settling down and, you know, now all of a sudden it makes sense.
So I start putting it to work essentially.
Yeah. So I opened a Scott Trade account. I put like $1,500 in. My thesis was, you know, what's the world going to need in 10 years? So like the first company I bought was a desalinization company out of Carlsbad, California. And it ended up pulling like 100%. It was a small cap. Then I started focusing on banks, in Europe. That the EU couldn't let fail. So it was like National Bank of Greece, Bank of Ireland. Then it was like cloud computing, 3D technology, 3D printing. So I bought like 3D, this company called Inovio, which was like 3D printing of like organs.
Interesting how that's still relevant.
And yeah, it was like they made kidneys, but not for people, but to test to see if drug therapies would work. Specific people. So it was pretty cool. And then on August 15th, I was home and I saw Eric Holder speaking about weed. Wow. And I was like, is that a thing? So I went to Google and it brought me to this crappy website called marijuanastocks.com, which literally like a year later, I ended up buying with two of my friends, my business partners now. And, you know, as they say, is like, you know, from when I got into weed, I'd never bought a penny stock in my life, but I was really attracted to the volatility. You know, my first weed trade, I put in $500 and all of a sudden it becomes 750. And I was like, this is fucking amazing.
This is great. Like, what year was that?
This is, I'm like, I'm so good at this.
When you bought your first pot ticker, what year was that?
2013. So it was literally August 16th. The symbol was MWIP.
M what?
MWIP, which became Agritech.
Oh, wow.
It was a pump and dump. I had no idea.
Go figure.
And then, so it goes up 50%. And then like 2 days later, it goes down 50%. And all of a sudden I lose $150. And I was like, whoa, what the hell happened? And from there, I found Grow Life, I think it was, which was PHOT.
Yeah.
Had like 4 cents.
Wow.
And just kept on buying, you know, started selling my other positions and putting it all into this one. And it ended up going to like 40 cents. And I split it up. You know, I became the wolf like January of 2003. And, you know, and the rest is history. So, like, you know, I always put it to people like this. I invested just under $10,000 in 2013. And I've been living off of that $10,000 ever since.
That's great. Yeah. Eventually, when you got on social media at the time, and you said, you know, you became the wolf, that you, could you tell us that kind of story? Like, how did you,
you
obviously made that for yourself, right? Was that just like a joke to yourself, or like,
how
did that come about?
It was a joke. Sorry, somebody just sent me a message that a stock that I'm long just did an offering.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I know you don't have Sundial.
No. It was U.S. Steel.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to ruin my night. That was the sound of my phone flipping over. I just don't want to look at it. On January 3rd, I know because I just had my anniversary, I was home and saw a trailer for The Wolf of Wall Street. And I was smoking a joint and I was like, I was like, Wolf of Weed Street. That's a clever name. I'm like, I bet somebody has it.
Yeah.
And nobody had it. So I grabbed it and I was like, oh, now I can finally talk about all these companies and how shitty they are.
Yeah.
That's what I started doing. And it was really just me being me with no audience, you know, and just like kind of joking and commenting. And then January 10th rolls around and one of my friends calls me and he's like, and I hadn't talked to him in a while. And he's like, hey, I'm like, hey man, what's going on? It's been a while. He's like, hey, yeah, great. I heard you're killing it at pot stocks. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm like, it's fucking nuts. I'm like, I'm destroying it. And when we start the conversation, my account's at like 55,000, you know? And, cause you know, Colorado just went legal. By the time I get off the phone with him, it's 75,000. And, you know, this is like the most money I've ever seen. And he's telling me, he's like, you got to sell all your positions. And I was like, why? I'm like, he's like, they're scams. And he's like, you know, talking to me like he's my older brother. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm seeing all these shorts build up. He's like, I got a Bloomberg terminal. And I was like, what's a Bloomberg terminal? And I was so I don't listen. I was like, yeah, you know what? He's like, shorts are piling up. He's like, there's an attack that's happening on the stock, on all these stocks. And I was just like, yeah, whatever. So what I did was, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to tweet the warning out. So I tweeted the warning. Mm-hmm. By the end of the day, my 75 became 29.
Well, your followers.
No. 75,000.
Oh, 75,000. I gotcha.
Yeah.
I thought you meant your small platform you were on.
Yeah. And I was like distraught, as you could imagine. I was like, oh my God, I gave up all that money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which will really change you and it should change you. So this is why I'm always like, you know, take profit. Yeah. See $100 bill on the ground, pick it up. You don't walk past it and hope that you'll see, you know, $200 bills.
Yeah. It's a great analogy.
I was like, well, I did call out the warning. So I had my other Twitter handle, which was just my name. And I was like, anybody see what this wolf guy said? And and it all of a sudden it caught fire. It was like Kaiser Soze from The Usual Suspects, like, you know, like the mythology of him. All of a sudden I was like a hedge fund guy. I was like, you know, a market maker, blah, blah, blah. Like the shit was wild.
How fast did your following grow?
And my following started to grow, but because I'd been looking at all these stocks, just because I had nothing better to do, I had a pretty good sense of what was going to, you know, move back up. So I started calling it out, and people started asking, and I, you know, I would just call it out, and then I'd be like, "Hey, look, you know, I said this yesterday," and it was just kind
fun.
Of
the, it was just fun for you.
Yeah, it was just fun for me. And then I was just kind of like, you know, can I take this further? Mm-hmm. So I would ask people on Twitter, be like, "Hey, does anybody live around here?" You know, and somebody would be like, "Yeah, I live in, you know, like Colorado Springs." And I'm like, "Cool, Mike, I'll send you $100 if you go to this address and see if it's a PO box." And if it's a PO box,
if it's a detached garage or not.
Right. And I was like, if it's a PO box, you know, take a picture, send it to me. If it's not, these are the questions I want to ask. So I was using Twitter as like boots on the ground.
Yeah, it's great. No, I'm a very strong advocate for that. Even just for myself, you know, I've never had any social media until I started doing this about a year or two ago. And I said to myself, I'm like, if I use Twitter the right way, it could be a very useful tool. And so far it has been, you know, it's helped me a lot. I've helped, I would hope, a lot of other people at the same time. I'm sitting here talking to you today, right? So that's pretty cool. So I'm using it the right way. And, you know, a lot of people, whoever's listening, you know, if you use it the right way, it could be very, very good.
Yeah. And I just looked at it as like, hey, if I'm going to throw $1,000 into this, let me get some insurance.
Exactly. You know? You started doing a little bit of a private investigative work.
Yeah. And then I started looking at all these inflated market caps. And then I started looking for companies that nobody had ever heard of that were doing the same thing and doing it better. So, you know, and some of them turned out to have just some shady people, but, you know, there was one, it went from 004 to 45 cents in a 3-month period.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I only bought $4,000 worth for 1 million shares, you know, all the way to 45 cents. You know, that's 450K for somebody like doesn't know his ass from his elbow. And I was so wet behind the ears, to give you an idea. And my following was so big. Tweed, which became Canopy, was like, "Hey, do you want to do a private placement with us?" And I was like, "What's a fucking private placement?" And I was like, "Oh, I got to be an accredited." They're like, "Yeah, as long as you're an accredited investor." And I like Googled accredited investor. And I was like, "Nah, that's all right." It was like Canopy shares at 75 cents Canadian.
Wow. It's amazing. I mean, at the time, it's kind of like, you know, I feel like a lot of people had, you know, if you had the attention to it back in the day, I guess you could say, there was so much dumb luck available to people who were at least focused on that area. Like, you know, like ACB was like, what, 30 or 50 cents at one point when it first got going?
Yeah, 35. And it was one of the first companies that we promoed on marijuanastocks.com. You know, we did the marketing for it. You know, never saying buy, but, you know, I don't think people could really complain, even though people love to complain, you know, when a stock goes the other way.
Yeah, what else is new?
Yeah.
So let me ask you. So, like, this time around, are you excited? What's different now with the space? Because I know there's kind of, I feel it too. There's a renewed sense of optimism, I guess, in the space with the, you know, the Democratic Congress. You have COVID, which obviously changed the game, stimulus money that's potentially over the horizon. So, you know, are you excited? Do you have a renewed sense of excitement this time around? What's different this time?
Yeah, around? I mean, you know, and you guys I know have been following me on Twitter enough to know that I exited all pot stocks in March of 2019, which I caught a lot of shit for. And in October of 2018, right before C-45, which is the bill for Canada to go completely legal, went into place, I exited 80% of my positions. and said, hey, this is the top and all the money is going to, you know, the futures in the MSOs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting back in, it made a lot of sense. And I started to get sized up in July. you know, just kind of seeing every, you know, just, you know, look, I'm a student of history. So I knew going into the election year that it would be, you know, strong.
Right.
You know, if you look back 2014, you know, in April of 2014, the pot stock bubble burst. And we didn't come back really until October of 2016, heading into that presidential election. And then, you know, we faded. But the difference was between Canada and the US is that because of the rules in Canada, or because of the rules in the US, the United States companies had to actually be fiscally responsible. They couldn't just throw money around and acquire things and do it on stock like Canopy was doing, or Aurora, or Afria, whoever. Because, you know, they've already got one hand tied behind their back. So they actually had to be operators, not, hey, I'm going to buy this just to keep it from you, you know, like petulant kids. So what you saw was, yeah, they, you know, they had a similar trajectory as the LPs, or licensed producers, for people that don't know what that mm-hmm. is. And those are the Canadian companies where, yeah, they're growing, you know, square footage, planting flags all over the place. And then, you know, then comes time to execute. The US, the Canadian companies didn't execute. The US companies started to execute. So it was like, I gave them like two quarters in a row of beats. And then I was like, okay, now is the time, because I don't want to come in March. You know, I don't want to come in the spring, because usually just a bad time. And there was also just too much action going on with COVID, like from March. So there was no, you know, like at the end of the day, I don't care whether it's a pot stock or a tech stock. The only thing that matters to me is the ROI. And the ROI was just way too great on some of these tech stocks, you know, versus, you know, especially some of the ones that I was getting into. I was getting into Square, Roku, and I got into Square at 40 and sold it at 85 and thought I was a genius, you know. Whoops.
I remember you following that. I was following that trade with you a little bit on social media. But just going back to MSOs, which are, you know, multi-state operators, again, for people who don't know. So you believe, you know, you don't believe they are on a better financial footing, essentially, going into when it's time to ramp up sales, essentially, right? Like once Congress hopefully moves this through and Schumer gets things going, they're just in a better position. They're just better, right?
Yeah, they're just eons better. So let's put it this way. Okay. Right now, Canopy growth, okay, which everybody knows, hit $42 today. I'm going to go off of last week's numbers. Okay. So just add to this number. So Canopy had a market cap of call it 16 billion US.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Curaleaf had a market cap of like 8.5 billion. Okay. Canopy's gross margin is negative 23%. Curaleaf's is positive 66%. Curaleaf did 133 million more last quarter in revenue than Canopy.
Wow.
So what's the difference? The difference is Canopy trades on a major exchange. So what happens? So let's forget about legalization. Let's forget about all that bullshit. Let's just say, if we're just basing it off of an equal playing field where Curaleaf is trading at a 5 multiple and Canopy is trading at an 18 multiple, yet, you know, it should be completely flipped. What happens when all of a sudden institutions, hedge funds, the Robinhood crowd, the Webull crowd can all buy Curaleaf because now it's on a major exchange? You know, if you're holding both, I'm telling you, you're stupid if you're not selling your Canopy to put it in Curaleaf.
Yeah, I mean, you said it numerous times, and I agree with you 100% that, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Canadian LPs are bad. They're good trades, and they're not as stable long term, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah, Canada's a mess. you know? So like people like, oh, Sundial. I'm like, Sundial is awful. Sundial was $14.
When I started going nuts, I said, what do you mean? The Moldy Weed Company? Is that really the one that's running?
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, this company's so good. It went from 14 to 13 cents, $14 to 13 cents. Mm-hmm. Okay. They had their weed recalled like the first week they went public.
I remember that. And the price just absolutely tanked. And then I heard about this recently. I was like, don't get me wrong. I traded it because I'll trade a bag of dog crap. You know, I don't care as long as I could trade it to somebody for more than I paid for it. But you know, it's even the tweet you put out the other day is funny. Something about crap.
I mean, yeah, just remember you can trade shit.
Yeah.
You know, you can, you know, just make sure you're not holding a bag of shit.
Yeah.
You know? So
I got a few DMs today too. They were like, oh, why is Sundial doing this? Why are they doing this? I'm like, because they're a crap company. They need money and they're seizing opportunity. They're not doing anything wrong. They're smart. You know, why would you not raise money when your stock is up like that?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and they're really just helping whoever was short, you know, in Canada, because that's what they do.
Mm,
but, you know, also with the difference between the U.S. and Canada, you know, look, you know, U.S. institutions buy the Canadian companies because they need exposure. You know, they said like brokers are still telling people to buy Aurora, you know, because they don't know. They have no idea.
Is that kind of your beef also with CNBC that they
refuse
to talk about MSOs on? It's essentially just because they're not trading on major exchanges, right? I mean, is that what it is? They just don't want to talk about non-major exchange tickers pretty much, even though they're better.
If you're like some institution or some hedge funds, even like, look, hedge funds can buy some of these things, but most can't, because in their charter, they have like, okay, you can't mess with OTC companies, which makes sense because you can manipulate an OTC. It's a compliance issue. So they're going to have to, like, I say, like, my strategy is not buy and hold, because I think that strategy is stupid, because this, you know, we get so many different ranges that, you know, you can get paid for being long. Mm-hmm. So like I'll sell some and then I'll rebuy it a little bit lower. I'll sell some, rebuy it a little bit lower. And I just keep doing this, accumulating free shares in the process.
Just keep folding.
Yeah. And
what tickers do you like doing this with?
Oh, I do it with, I mean, right now, like Curaleaf, TerrAscend, Cresco, Harvest, Green Thumb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't own any Trulieve because I can't.
And then you have some MSOs as well, the ETF.
Yeah, I have the ETF, and then I have some options.
That's a buy and hold, though, no? Or do you mess with it?
That one I just hold.
Yeah. Okay. So with the exception of that, essentially, they're all just trade and fold.
Yeah, but I'm holding like a serious core. You know, so I'll only trade like 10% of my position.
Nice.
You know,
so, you know, a couple articles came out recently, I think, that really kind of sparked this space, was that MJ Biz article. And then also that the MJ Moment, I was reading that one yesterday, that had some good points in it. I think, you know, those articles definitely got things going this week. Right. Did you see
that again? What?
Those articles that came out this week, the MJ Biz article and the MJ Moment.
I think you retweeted
one of them as well, the Marijuana Moment.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like those were kind of igniting the space this week, right?
Yeah, they ignited stuff that we already look. Here's the thing, guys, and I'm going to say this to your audience.
Sure.
Pot stock traders and investors are some of the fucking dumbest people on the planet. Okay. Some of the biggest pussies and weakest hands I've ever seen. Okay. If you follow me, you've got real diamond hands. Okay. Because you've watched enough of my shit and heard me talk, that you understand the process. You know, these things are some of the first things to get cut, but everybody is looking at it as like, oh, this is the top. Somebody sent me a message today. Like, I had to get out. Like, I don't care if I missed the top. And I'm like, yo, you're missing the middle.
Yeah. If that.
It's like this. If I told every one of you, let's say Curaleaf, okay? Let's say for Curaleaf, it's the biggest company in the United States. If I told you Curaleaf is going to be $50 in the next 3 years, okay? Do you give a shit what it does on the day to day? Then all of a sudden you've got confidence and you're like, I can fucking buy this dip because I know the end result. Okay. That's how I trade these pot stocks. That's why, I have my own little ETF that I put together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I started to give you an idea. When I first took my position in Curaleaf, it was $7. Okay. I've accumulated just from trading back and forth the way I do since July, 5,000 shares for free. That's a lot.
Yeah.
For Curaleaf. Okay.
Without even a lot of volatility in the meantime as well.
Oh, I mean, but there's actually a good amount. I'll get to like how to really juice it.
Yeah. Pretty soon is going to be when you get these little political headlines that come out. It's just little short-term selling opportunities.
Yeah. Watch. There'll be a pullback right after earnings. There'll be a pullback like a week before earnings and then it'll like rip and then it'll dip, you know? So it would have to go below $2 for me to lose any money. And I just stopped estimating once I got to two,
mm-hmm.
you know, because if let's say I buy 1,000 shares at seven and it goes to eight. All right. And then I sell it at eight and then it goes back to seven. I rebuy 1,000 shares. Now people are going to say, and I ask, okay, what's my average? My average isn't seven. It's six. I just chopped the dollar off of it. Like that's what it's going to take to get me to break even. And I do this with all of my positions every single day. I manage them. I maintain them. So like everybody says, oh, I want long-term capital gains. It's fucking dumb. You know, I'll make it even easier for everybody. Okay. Just to show them that the process works. In 2016, I bought Aurora at 89 cents. I bought 20,000 shares. Call it 18 grand.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up running to three. They went a little bit further. I sell it, make 60 grand. So I don't hold anything into March because of the Ides of March. I get back into it at $1.03 after that. Okay. So now I got 60,000 shares.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to 10. I take it. Okay. So now it's 600 grand. Pulls back to five next summer. I reload it. The position ends up getting sold, okay, for $1.2 million in October of 2018. Started as a $20,000 position. If I had just held it, I would have made $240,000. Use the market to pay you. That's how you make money, you know? That's how you do it.
Exactly. Knowing when to take profits as well. You know, everybody, I'm going to hold forever. It's just not a good strategy.
Yeah,
it's an outdated strategy, I think.
It really is.
You know, it's like, why not play the ranges, you know, hold the core, trade the range and know when to take the profit as well and not get caught up in all the noise. But yeah, it's very, very good information for sure. I know you have some catchphrases that kind of wake people up too, you know, buy the dip, pussy. It's definitely one of them. Where that's essentially what you're doing, right? You're just buying the dips and selling the rips along the way.
Yeah, look, I'm confident because we already have a roadmap. Mm-hmm. Like anybody can do what I do, okay? And the reason why it's like, okay, do you fucking know history? You know, like just look at a chart, go back, look at everything that happened with Canada from 2016 to 2018. That is your roadmap. It's going to be the same roadmap for the United States. The only difference is the United States companies are already executing. They promised and they have delivered. Where the Canadians, they promised and they didn't deliver. There's not any of them that are profitable.
And some big markets are opening up too. I mean, New York is going to go full wreck hopefully this year, it sounds like. You know, I mean, New York is more than just a state that's opening up. It's a big market that's opening up essentially, right?
It's huge. You know, and analysts are saying, you know, they're putting a multiple on the industry of 20. They think it can go up 20 times. And I'm like, whoa, okay, slow your roll. You say 20 times, people start getting crazy. Call it 3. Who cares? You know, then if it develops from there, so be it.
Yeah. I mean, but they're definitely more likely to push this a little faster, though, now with COVID straining the budgets of all these states, right? I think this was kind of the nudge that it took. Did you see the legislation getting pushed as fast if there wasn't COVID, I guess you could say, or the state budgets just in such a need of desperate tax revenue now that they're willing to do it?
I mean, I've been saying this for a while, especially in states that, you know, industry that had been a hallmark of that state had just kind of fallen by the wayside. Like, you know, let's think of like West Virginia, Kentucky for like coal. Mm-hmm. Nobody's fucking mining coal. Nobody wants to mine coal. Nobody wants black lung disease. I'm like, let them grow weed, you know, let them grow hemp. So this was kind of always going to happen, but you know, the money that is just kind of, you know, at the end of every year, you know, once the numbers come out, then all of a sudden states are like, yeah, I want to get it. I want to get some of that.
Yeah. Know? I mean, I think the states are going to get the FOMO, right? They're going to see a state next door making money and solving their budget deficit. And they're going to say, why am I not doing this? I think that's what Cuomo is starting to feel.
Yeah,
right? He's got Jersey to his left. He's got, you know, whoever to their right. It's like, he's right in the middle. It's like, you're going to have customers going right through your state, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, tourism in New Jersey is gonna, you know, it's gonna go through a renaissance up until New York gets legal weed, because you know, finally New Yorkers are gonna have a reason to go to Jersey.
Yeah. I'm not, but maybe
me neither. People send me my weed.
So I noticed, you know, it's been a little while since you started doing your own streams. You know, I liked watching those a while ago. You used to, you know, rip on a vape pen and eat cookies. And were those like kind of therapy sessions for you at the time?
You know, I started doing them because I wasn't really in getting back into weed, and everybody's like, you know, what's going on? So I started with live streams, like just off of my phone. And then I was like, oh, let me start doing it on Twitter, on YouTube. I mean, and, you know, I found it helpful because one of the ways that I'm not like one of those guys that's going to look at a chart and be like, oh, yeah, you know, look at that VWAP cross. Yeah. Like, let me fucking buy some stock. That's not me.
Yeah.
Like I go based off of like, you know, the sentiment, the psychology, the fundamentals, like, is it something that I think has legs? And then I'll consult the chart, you know, just to kind of give me that push if I need it. Usually I don't even look, I won't, you know.
Which time frames do you generally look at? Like a 6 month?
I'll look at like, yeah, I'll go to a 6 month, but you know, I look at price action so much that it's like, you know, I have a pretty good idea of where support and resistance is on their own. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like with, you know, here's an easy one, right? It's like, okay, they're saying that weed in the United States is going to be $29 billion this year. Okay. That's the projection. Illegal weed is $250 billion, conservative estimate in the US. Okay. So I just look at it as like, we've got more, you know, more to cut into, right? Mm-hmm. Like everybody thinks that federal legalization is going to be great for the Canadian companies. I think it's the death of Canadian companies. So I see that liquidity coming to the United States. So that's a catalyst. I see like Robinhood being able to trade it as a catalyst.
Yeah. I mean, do you see like a GameStop kind of moment for weed at that point, you know?
Yeah, I saw like Forbes
running these names, you know?
Yeah, Forbes wrote something about that this week. I took a little bit of issue with it because they cited Medbox.
Okay.
$2 to 215. The volume was 1470. Like, you know, it basically got juiced. No, I mean, it really is going to depend on the float. You know, look, similar to GameStop, if, you know, and there's some guys on Twitter that have like real big audiences, you know, and they're all anonymous, of course.
Yeah.
But if some of those guys focus their attention on something that's a low float and it's an actual real company, they could take, I mean, I know a stock, I'm not even going to name it. Mm-hmm. It's like 55 cents. And that thing could go to $8 on like $100,000 of volume. You know, that could have like a GameStop moment, which would be nuts.
I think I might know the stock you're talking about, but I'm not going to say it.
But the problem is like creating that continuity. And then it becomes a game of musical chairs, you know, because people are going to take profit.
That's kind of like what happened, you know, before we came on, we were kind of talking about what happened with GameStop, where I don't know if we want to get into this too much on here because everybody's kind of, I think, tired of this idea in a way. But it was interesting what you said that, you know, if they just focused on GameStop, it would have went a lot further. I mean, maybe could you give us a little bit more of that while we're on air?
Yeah. So
that was very interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, I compared it a lot to what I saw in 2014. So in 2014, when I was calling stuff out and like alerting stuff, I kept it to three companies, you know, and we would take profit and then, you know, we'd roll it into this one, that one, the next one. But the problem was, you know, like I alerted something, it ended up going up 10,000%. So a bunch of people made stupid amounts of money. You know, this kid at the time, Will Johnson, who's like, oh, number one Call of Duty player in the world, made like $1 million on it, to give you an idea. So then afterwards, all of a sudden people were just flush with cash. They started quitting their jobs and they're like, I could do this. You know, like I could run my own play. And all of a sudden there wasn't three plays, but there was 20 plays, you know? And then all of a sudden it was like infighting, people like fighting with themselves. And you know, that run just couldn't be sustainable because the liquidity wasn't focused on one area. So it ended up actually imploding the entire market, and just causing that collapse. I mean, that's exactly what we're seeing on GameStop, you know? So if you follow me on Twitter, you know, like I bought, $95 GameStop puts yesterday when the price was 250. Just based off, not based off of, I didn't even look at the chart. I was like, this shit's just going to come down. I was like,
it has to.
It's silver. Like they're running it into silver. You know, the Nokia naked, like all these things, like the music stops eventually. And
well, yeah,
if you're up that much money, you're stupid. Like you could wipe out your debt, your student loans. This whole like HODL thing is the fucking dumbest shit I've ever heard. No, you want to stick it to the man, you know,
pay taxes. Yeah.
Like don't work for somebody and then get good at trading. Like any fool can make money. The hard part is actually keeping money. And, yeah. You know, as we speak, GameStop's at $87 right now.
Yeah, I'm not even watching it. I mean, it's like this just in, Robinhood actually lets you buy more than $16 worth of it. I saw today, it's like you couldn't buy more than 4 shares of certain companies at one point. It's like, what a joke, you know?
Yep.
Unbelievable what was pulled there. But I'll just say one thing on this. I mean, we were doing a little bit of investigative reporting on our own end, and we were looking into it a little bit in general because it's just, you know, pissed off a lot of people with just how manipulated all the brokers were the other morning. I mean, pretty much trading started at 10 a.m. Let's be real here. Trading started at 10 a.m. for the last, you know, few days, but it's more Citadel than Robinhood. Robinhood was a smokescreen.
Yeah,
it's more.
I'm lurking in the background here, guys. But that was like the number one thing I was researching for the last few days. Were the ties to Citadel and Ken Griffin and how much liquidity in the market Ken Griffin controls, which is about a quarter. So, they definitely are holding the reins. With market liquidity and Citadel's who stepped in to bail out Melvin Capital with what, $2.5 billion. While the trading services were all down, like Eric was just mentioning, everything had crashed. Just a really interesting chain of events. And it kind of all leads all the way back to Citadel, really, Citadel Securities.
Yeah. Jason, did you ever get through to E-Trade?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, eventually after like an hour, I gave up. Yeah. I ended up taking a nap because I was like, if my head's just not there, and you know, I don't want to get pushed to the point where I become a serial killer. It's like a 30-minute nap. I went into my room. My wife's like, "What?" You know, because we're both home. It's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm going to take a nap." It's like, "Aren't you going to work?" I'm like, "Nah, not today."
So speaking of work, you have like kind of a new line that you're a part of, this this True Trading Group. So you are one of the partners in that, or did you jump on kind of after that got going? I know you guys are doing a lot of big things over there. I mean, you're dropping a lot of, you know, Chappelle show gifts, and you're giving away Teslas and stuff. So maybe can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah. So my business partners from Marijuana Stocks had started it in like, I think 2017. And honestly, I never wanted to be part of it. I didn't see any reason. I was just like, I like to trade on my own. You know, I live on a lake, so I trade under a tree in my backyard on my lake.
Nice.
Like on my phone. I have a fan because it gets hot in Florida. And that's it. Like people would call me and they hear birds and they're like, "You at the zoo?" I'm like, "No, I'm in my backyard." But like, I like to be very zen. Like I don't trade with a laptop. I just trade with my phone, which people find shocking. I find it shocking that people trade on their laptop. It's just so easy. So, you know, in January, like January 7th, I first learned about COVID. And I was already pretty skeptical on the market and everything. And, you know, one of my friends is like, "Have you heard of this COVID thing?" And so we started taking a look at it. And I'm like, "Man, as soon as that thing hits Foxconn," which is where they build all like the Apple products, I'm like, "The market's going to take a shit." And I started saying this and like talking about it in streams and nobody was listening. And then people would be like, "You're a fucking idiot," and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, just really tired of it because I was just giving it away for free. And then when the market hit, when the SPY hit 220, I was like getting ready to just go shopping. And I was like, "All right, let me come in." I was like, because this is going to be probably the biggest opportunity for investing like so far in my career. And I just started calling like basically everything that I was buying out to everybody. And, you know, the whole thing is there's a couple of different mods. Everybody has a different focus. Like I was just focusing on weed,
right?
Options. So up until July, I was just doing options and then like whatever long-term positions, you know, some people doing small caps, whatever, but we basically just gave like an education from top to bottom, like courses, like you take tests. You know, the thing, you know, if you want to try it out, it's like $3. It's called TTG3. Mm-hmm. I'll type it in here.
It's actually, I think we linked your website in the description of this video. So if people are interested in checking out the website, the link is in the description.
Yeah. I mean, look, we charge a yearly. So it's like, it's one price for a year. It's no fucking monthly bullshit because monthly bullshit, like those people, they come, they read the courses and then they bounce and we're just kind of like, no, fuck off.
Yeah. You invest time and effort into somebody who ultimately isn't playing the long game.
Right. And, you know, we're growing really fast. So, you know, with like the Teslas, we were like, "Oh, we could spend a bunch of money on marketing, or we could give away a Tesla or $30,000 to our members." And it has to be legit when it's over 10 grand. So we actually had to file a thing with the Florida Department of Agriculture, which is weird. You know, so they had to like look at our like random like person picker,
right?
And we had to go through all these steps, get a surety, what's called something called an surety bond.
Wow.
And yeah, we've given away 3 Teslas. Well, everybody takes the money, and we do a Porsche for the lifetime members, and everybody takes the money. So I think
I should join.
Yeah, we do like 50 grand, but we, you know, we give away laptops, we give away like trading rigs. But it's like, you know, Netflix of trading.
Yeah, it sounds great.
And I always look at it like this. I'm always like, you guys should charge more. And I'm like, they're like, well, you can't. And I was like, motherfucker. I'm like, look at everything that I've been telling them to buy, like pot stock wise. You know, I was like,
it's paying for itself, essentially.
Yeah. Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, like, one of the guys that I like, you know, that's on your streams is Michael Edwards. So is he like a friend of yours from years ago, or somebody you met through the process? Cause I mean, the streams that he's doing, he's very high energy and he's got, you could tell just a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, he's my partner.
He's great. He's absolutely great. I mean, I've gotten a lot out of those streams as well. And
yeah, he's my business partner.
Right.
We own, yeah, like me, him, and Adam own Marijuana Stocks and like a bunch of other stuff together.
Oh, I didn't realize that you owned Marijuana Stocks as well. So TTG is just another arm of that overall umbrella.
Yeah, it's something. It's something else.
I got you. Know? Yeah, it's cool. So I know you got some hobbies outside of trading. I know you have like a pretty cool old Jaguar, right? Is that like a 50s kind of model?
Yeah, it's a 1952 XK120 Roadster. Basically, if you've seen Cruel Intentions, it's the same car in Fire Engine Red.
That was from like the Alpine Rally or something like that, right?
I have no idea.
No, I think it's like in London or something.
A lot of those
Jaguars, I don't know if it was yours, the XK120, but they used to be wood framed. I don't know if that's actually.
Yeah, no, mine is definitely not wood framed. Yeah. This is actually my second one. I had one when I lived in South Beach and I literally owned it for like 2 weeks. And then one of my friends is like, I'll buy it from you. And I was like, yeah, please take it. Because it was just like overheating. It was like really, it had the original engine in it, which was a V12 and just heat up. And like, you couldn't drive it for more than like 5 miles. And then all of a sudden the car would just stop.
Is it air cooled? It's just an air cooled engine.
Yeah. It's just air cooled.
Wow.
So like mine has, doesn't have a V12, but actually has a Triumph motor in it.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I like take it to go get groceries and
that's awesome.
I just whip around it. You know, I actually have a
Triumph Bonneville 750 motorcycle.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Mint condition.
It's like a go-kart for dads, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. What size motor is in there? Like how many horses is that? Like it's like around 100 or something?
I don't know. I like the fastest I've gone in is like 77 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's just, you know, the wind in your hair kind of car, right?
Yeah, I'm not trying to die.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like getting an accident in that car and it's pretty much game over.
Yeah.
But I know. I'm not really a car guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know you're into some really funny stuff. If anybody follows you on Twitter, they know that, like, you know, Reface definitely got out of hand for you for a little while.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of fun.
Definitely got out of hand for me.
Star Wars.
It got to the point where when Reface was taking up too much of my day, I was like, I gotta tone down this Reface a little bit. This is getting kind of ridiculous. Because what it is once you find out who you look like, you start using that like crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
What else made me laugh? That when you had that when you had that like cutout of it, and you were like putting that in your shower and shit.
Dude, I still have it.
That was so funny.
That's the best $40 that I ever spent on Amazon.
I was gonna say, where'd you get that on Amazon?
I would just I put it in the shower, like I put it in like the pantry. I put it in like the garage, like so when my like wife goes to work, she opens the garage door and all of a sudden it's staring there.
Did your cleaning lady quit?
I put it outside my window.
Yeah.
I get crazy with it.
That's so fun.
I bought them from my friend so they could do it to their wife. You know, like I got, I see some of the comments, like I got a lot of, like my whole office is all Star Wars gear. My son's middle name is Skywalker.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know.
Mark Hamill, my wife's like, if you want that middle name, Mark Hamill has to say it's okay. Challenge accepted.
I mean, you bought some pretty legit shoes the other day. Like, what was it, like Boba Fett shoes with the side satchel?
Yeah, I got the Boba Fetts and I got the Lando Calrissians. And
yeah, that's great.
Lando Calrissians are so dope. And I put them on and I was like, oh, just to try them on. And I was like, man, these are really comfortable. So I went and I bought three more pairs and all of a sudden it was like they canceled two of them. So I guess you can only get two. So I have one pair because I wanted to get one pair for myself, like to wear.
Yeah.
One pair to just keep forever and just not do anything, kind of like my Boba Fett's. Mm-hmm. And then another pair for myself because I know I'm going to fuck these up. And another pair for my son for when he's of age and can fit into the shoe. And he's two right now.
Where do you buy a shoe like that?
I bought it right from Adidas.com.
Oh, wow. Check that out. The limited edition, I would assume.
Yeah, the Boba Fett's I had to buy from someone. So I paid a little bit for those.
Yeah, the first thing I thought, I'm like, oh, Wolf of Weed. He could put his weed in that satchel on the shoes. It's true. 2-year-old son, I'm in the same boat, man. I got a 2.5-year-old son and a newborn in the house. It's crazy times.
I know. I'm like, my daughter's 5.5. And like somebody in her class had COVID, like in her vicinity. So she got quarantined. Oof. And like we took tests over the weekend and we're fine, but they're like, you still can't come back.
Well, I mean, luckily my kids are so young that we don't really have to worry about that anytime soon. He's going to start going to nursery school pretty soon, but
yeah, no, my 2-year-old, he's 2.5 also. He's already in school. He goes to the same school as my daughter. They both go to Catholic school with like Brady Cobb from, what's it called? Bluma Wellness. You know, that company, they were just acquired by Cresco.
Okay.
Our kids go to school together. His kids are a little older.
It's nerve wracking for parents, right? I mean, you send them there every day. It's like, are they going to come home with something?
Yeah, exactly. You know, are they going to kill the grandparents?
Yeah. So, so I also had something else written down here. We kind of touched on it before what you were saying when you're kind of folding over your positions, but you know, one of the things that I picked up from one of the streams that I think you did on True Trading Group at the time was, take trading profits and move them into long-term wealth. And I know maybe you don't want to talk about it tonight, but, you know, X was one of them, I think, that you do that with, right?
Yeah. So, you know, especially if you're trading options, like people trade options and they think like, oh, I'm just going to hoard this cash. And that's the dumbest thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to take that cash and put it towards something you actually want to be long.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than putting money in your savings account at this point. So.
Right. And, you know, so I was doing it with a lot of recovery companies. I did it with US Steel, but I was doing it with like Rite Aid at 11, Walgreens at like 38, 39, Exxon 40 to 32. And so all I was doing was if, let's say I make $1,000, I would take 500 and immediately buy some of those stocks. I didn't care. Like, I don't really want to be long airlines right now, but I do know that they are going to recover. So I will, if you give me $500, I'll buy some stock because it's really not my money. So, but the caveat there is you can't buy American Airlines. You can't buy stuff with like huge debt. So I'm buying like Spirit, JetBlue, Alaska Air, Southwest, like stuff with good balance sheets. I was buying Budweiser, Boeing, you know, stuff that is really easy to understand them for the recovery trade.
Yeah. I think that's very important for people to understand too, that like, you know, it's fun to trade penny stocks. It's fun to participate in the volatility. It's fun to be a part of the pot stock sector. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, anybody who's really is playing the long game, me included, I mean, I have a quality list as well, you know, and I'm taking trading profits and I'm just building that long-term portfolio up essentially. You know, I mean, your money in these nonsense stocks is one thing, but you know, you got to start parking it somewhere a little safer eventually if you're in this for the long term.
Yeah. Look, as somebody that started, I mean, in essence, really with penny stocks, I'll tell you right now, I've made far more money trading real companies than trading penny stocks.
See.
Because once you get into the rhythm and then you have a real understanding of the market and, you know, like every year I look back and I'm like, Jesus, you were a shitty trader last year. You know, like
you could just buy Tesla, right?
You could just buy Tesla.
Stop everything you're doing and just buy Tesla and you'd be fine.
Yeah. Buy Tesla, buy Neo.
Neo. Don't even get me started on Neo.
I actually don't own either one of those.
Ugh, I had a ton of Neo at like 2 and change.
Yeah. I think we
like
all
a lot, did. Like a lot of it at 2. And then watching this run has just made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, like Do you want to have money so you can like buy yourself a car, or do you want to have money where you can buy yourself a house? You know, that's really, that's the difference. Yeah. And there's no like,
buy two houses.
You know, look, you trade penny stocks. You're at the mercy of whoever's on the other end. And I can tell you, like, there's a lot of shady shit that goes on. I've seen it, you know, it's like, oh, I follow this group. You know, most of those groups are front loading. You know, people aren't anonymous.
These social media groups are definitely leading a lot of people to slaughter for sure these days. And there's a lot of followers in the market right now, even more than ever. It's almost kind of scary.
But, yeah, and I'm not saying that all of these people are bad. I'm just saying, you know, treat it as, you know, look at, I always take this approach. Treat every company, everybody that tells you to buy a stock, as somebody that's trying to fuck you.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah. How are they trying to fuck me? Pretty much.
Yeah.
Exactly. True. You know, and it's funny. I mean, I wanted to ask kind of a follow-up to a tweet you put out a couple of days ago when all this craziness was going on. You said there are going to be unintended consequences stemming from this silver squeeze game, AMC, X, etc. You better have a goddamn strategy, because I've been gaming mine out all weekend. So, you know, could you let us know a little bit what that strategy was at this point and kind of how that's working out for you?
Yeah, my strategy was great. I mean, it's massively successful.
Really?
My strategy was really, you know, so the unintended consequences, you know, we saw. If anybody had a brokerage the last couple of days that was really slow, you saw. That's an unintended consequence, right?
Right.
So not being able to access, excuse me, your accounts. But then you had the other consequence where people were cutting really good companies that they were long to cover losses from some of the bad things. So we saw, that's why we saw like that dip in the market that was just kind of dramatic. So you had to really go through a lot of these, you know, companies and sectors that were getting hit. Like weed was getting hit already, and then it just got like really hit. And which is good for me, because, you know, I already knew what was going on, and I'm still really bullish. So it was like a really easy dip for me to buy. But in other sectors, then you had to say, well, is it because of people trying to, you know, cover their margin call from GameStop, or because something material happened to the company?
Mm-hmm.
So you had to kind of like play that out and like, look, okay, well, you know, what are the safe havens? Like, where can I go from here? What's just kind of chilling? What is not on anybody's radar? Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, like one of the things that I did was, because all of the pot stocks just got whacked, I bought a ton of the MSOS ETF options, and they were pretty expensive. I bought $42 February 19th calls between $3 and $3.30. And the whole while this stuff is going on, and I was just like, you know, weed's just gonna like, it's gonna get pounded. This can go lower. I'm just gonna keep buying. I'm really comfortable in this trade, and I've given myself enough time that this is gonna blow over. You know, today, like, they were going off at $5. And on top of that, I was like buying the dip. I was, you know, playing some earnings, and, you know, that's it. But again, you know, in the market, you just have to really be prepared for anything that could happen.
It seemed like the recent dip wasn't sector specific. It was really just a lot of big houses just de-risking essentially, and just, you know, moving money around to cover some of these other things that they were losing on. But it felt to me like a temporary blip. But at the same time, I mean, with me, when I'm buying a dip like that, I'm cautiously buying the dip, you know, and then once it confirms and we see a rebound, that's when I complete what I'm doing essentially. But, you know, there's a lot more catalyst on the horizon. I mean, there's stimulus coming, you know, fundamentally, there's really no reason for the market to be selling off right now. You know, you have a little bit more of a calm political environment right now than there was for the last couple of years. So, you know, I don't see any reason to deviate from my longs and the original idea of why I got into those plays in the first place. And I sure as shit wasn't going to let Wall Street bets shake me out of those ideas, you know? So I used it as an opportunity personally.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Wall Street bet idea, it was like one, it was two guys. It was Michael Burry from The Big Short. And then the kitty corner guy. And he was long those GameStop options like 6 months ago.
Really?
So this thing didn't just manifest over a, you know, a week or 2 weeks. Yeah, it's like a lot of fun, but fuck, man. You know, a lot of people were buying that shit at 300. People were asking me if they should buy it at 300.
I was getting text messages from so many people, and they're like, did you get burned? Did you buy it? Should I buy it? I'm like, stop. Just everybody stop. I'm not even talking like, about this with you right now. You know, when your grandmother's calling you, asking you about crypto, it's like, it's time to, that's the top. You
know? Yeah, like, what is this doggy coin?
Yeah. What's this dog coin? We actually, I made a video. Stephen rendered the video. I made the audio, and it was me sitting on the couch, and my newborn son was just wailing, crying. And I recorded the audio, and then I was over it. I was like, oh, why did I buy so much Dogecoin? I bought it on margin. And I was like doing a voiceover. So we actually have that video on our YouTube channel. I suggest all of you check it out. It's kind of funny. But it's just like, you know, my baby crying in the back.
That coin was created to make fun of all the other coins. It literally serves no function,
yeah,
no purpose.
I mean, Elon, as long as Elon keeps tweeting it, it's got relevance.
Yeah, it's basically a shell company.
Oh, really?
With nobody at the helm.
I know nothing about it. I just know about that, like, Tibetan terrier, some kind of weird dog that they use as the meme. It's like, I've never bought it, but a few of us in the group were kind of smiling when we were watching it go down the other day when everybody's thinking it's going to a dollar. It's like, do you understand what kind of percentage increase that is? You know, like how much money would have to come into it. But yeah, it's crazy times for sure. So one last thing that I wanted to kind of touch on, I don't know how much time you have tonight. Are you doing okay on time?
Yeah, I got another question in me.
Okay. All right. So just broad topic. I know I'm certainly looking at it. You know, we've kind of talked about it behind the scenes a little bit about all this, this shroom. I wouldn't even call it a craze, but it's the sector itself. I mean, is this early, like an early boom waiting to happen? Like, is this another kind of pot stock sector in its infancy? And is it just not getting enough credit and flying under the radar right now?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, like people think, oh, man, like MindMed's not doing anything. Yeah, that's good for you. You know, it allows you to take profit from other trades and, you know, accumulate a position. Look, MindMed is going to be a $5 company, USD all day. You know, betting against MindMed is like betting against Bruce Linton, you know, which.
Yeah. Kevin O'Leary.
You know, Compass, which is another company. Like, I know, because I saw people were talking about Cybin, which I'm actually a founder of. Or founding investor of,
right.
You know, like these companies are doing, you know, really interesting stuff like Atai Life Sciences, which is going to be going public soon. It's going to double the first day it comes out, probably. Like that's an IPO you should want to be part of. Think about with everything COVID and all like the trauma, the being home, the PTSD or whatever, you know, the depression.
Yeah.
You know, that is like,
I see this as a mental health play, post pandemic mental health trade.
It's a mental health play. So anybody that says, oh, like, and I see companies like, oh, you know, penny stocks, like don't fuck with them. Like if you fuck with them, just get in, get out. Like there's a lot of shit like RVV, like Revive, that thing was a Bitcoin company, a pot stock company, a PPE company, and then a shroom company. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
You know, but people buy it, right?
You told me in the past, and this kind of resonated with me, you told me at one point, you said, they're either, a lot of these companies are either a scam, crap, or both, which kind of woke me up to the idea very early. And, you know, so the ones I'm looking at are MindMed, and then also Cybin. Cybin looks like they know what they're doing. I watched a few, even just a few.
Yeah, their videos. The doing.
You know, the CEO seems like he has a good head on his shoulders, and they have clinical trials that are ongoing right now. And, you know, I think even just those clinical trials, like if you compare it to CBD in a way, you know, it's good that they're doing these clinical studies early in the growth story, right? Because, I mean, CBD kind of like, it ran away from itself too fast, where there's really no clinical science behind it, right? Like the FDA never approved anything, or it's all just claims at this point, right? Where, I mean, if you're playing the long game with shrooms, it would be nice that those data points come out before you make any big investments, I guess, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I love them. I mean, I really love Cybin. you know, I have to thank Compass for the success of Cybin, because Compass went public and then Cybin was like in the middle of doing a raise. And, you know, we didn't like, when you invest in these companies before they're really anything, your expectations are like, well, you know, I hope it does all right, you know? And then with like this Peter Thiel company, all of a sudden everybody was coming to Cybin. And they were like, we want to give you $100 million. And they were like, what? We're doing a raise at 75 cents. We only have 45 million to give, you know? And then all of a sudden it was like off to the races. And, you know, it was like acquire. And, you know, their whole thing is get, you know, like think of all these companies as like trying to build out some kind of like drug therapy, mm-hmm. or a way to a drug therapy. Cybin is like filling like the links in the chain, mm-hmm. and creating those so that the other companies need them, to like the MindMeds or the Compass. So, you know, Stifel, which is a brokerage house or analyst, gave them a speculative buy target for $5 Canadian, which comes out to $3.95. I'll take it.
Not bad. I mean, didn't they just do an offer at like $1.75 too? So
yeah, they did it for 20 million bucks.
Yeah. That closes soon actually too. A couple 10, 20 days from now, I think.
Yeah. They don't need any money, and it'll get filled pretty quick. But yeah, like I think you want to keep it down to, you know, like three horses and then, you know, a couple more speculative companies.
Yeah, exactly. Trade the hype, but hold the good ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool. All right, Jason, I don't want to hold you up anymore. I could see, you know, X on the chart next to me, and I don't know if you're looking at it, but it's probably not making you too happy.
Well, fuck, now I have to look at it. Yeah, I just looked at how many call options I have. I mean, they're for March, but I've got 260.
Yeah. So. But we really appreciate you coming on tonight and doing this for us. You know, it's definitely not something that you normally do. We're a very small audience, and yeah, you know, it just shows that like you definitely keep it real, and you know, you care about the community itself. And we really appreciate you coming on and, you know, just shooting the shit with us, essentially.
Yeah, man, it's fun. I my butler puts my pant legs on one leg at a time, like everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, thank you. And, you know, thank everyone who supports this content as we continue to grow. You know, we're trying to do different things with the channel itself. So if you have any suggestions for, you know, future guests or future content, feel free to just, you know, drop us a DM or a comment in the stream. Our next episode is going to be 216. We'll announce the guest soon. Be sure to check out Jason on Twitter at Wolf of Weed Street and True Trading Group on Twitter as well at True Trading GRP. You can also get more information about the True Trading Group at truetradinggroup.com. We appreciate all of you, and the best of luck. We'll talk to you all soon.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.